Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Dorothy Gundy, Anna Mateo, and Phil Dierking. Later, Ashley Thompson and Katie Weaver have a special report on one of America's national treasures. But first, this report.
For most college students, the main goal of higher education is earning a degree that will lead to a successful and satisfying career. The years spent working on a program of study can be fun and include life-changing experiences. And many college classes provide students with interesting information that they may not have even thought about before. Still, the most important thing for most students is what those years of hard work and studying can bring them once they graduate. But Jennifer Simons argues that there are many valuable things people can learn before they even attend their first college class. Simons is the director of undergraduate admissions and recruitment at Northeastern University in Boston, Massachusetts. Simons says the college application process can teach young people a lot about supporting themselves and making connections with others. In the United States, the process starts in the final 2 years of high school, when students are about 16 or 17 years old. This is the time when young people are forced to consider what happens after they leave high school. They face questions like, where do you want to go to college? And what will you study?
There are so many choices available to students that these questions can seem very difficult to answer, Simons says. So, she suggests that young people try to get a better understanding of themselves before making any decisions. Simons says that young people should start keeping a journal or written record of their ideas well before they start thinking about college. They should ask themselves questions like, who am I? What do I want out of life? And what are my strengths and weaknesses? Students should then try to write down answers to these and other questions once a day or even weekly. Also, Simons adds, they should try to take note of meaningful events that teach them something about the world or themselves. The answers to these general questions, she says, will likely give students a better understanding of how to answer more specific questions. They will have a better idea about where they might want to spend 4 years of their lives while working toward a college degree, for example. It can also give young people ideas of what to talk about in writing samples that most college applications require. In addition, she says, students who know their own strengths will better understand how to ask people they know to write letters of recommendation for them. Simons says the more young people know about themselves, the more likely they are to make decisions that will make them happy. This includes more than just decisions about college. If you understand who you are, Simons told VOA, you are less likely to fall prey to somebody else's vision for what you should be or where you should go.
Something else students can take from the application process, Simons notes, relates to how busy the process makes them. High schoolers already have their studies, personal relationships, and possibly jobs to worry about. The application process requires them to find schools that interest them, find out how to request admission, and prepare application materials. Simons argues that balancing responsibilities is one of the most important skills anyone can learn. She said, "I think that you really are laying the groundwork for becoming an adult by learning how to prioritize your time." However, Simons admits that learning time management can be very difficult for young people. So learning to ask for help when you need it is another equally important lesson. School counselors, older students, and friends and family members who have attended college can all be important resources.
But with asking for help also comes thanking people once you have received it, Simons says. A simple thing young people can learn to do is sending a letter or an email thanking those who helped them get into their school of choice. Relationship building like this is important outside the college application process. Simons suggests that students should make such efforts with teachers, classmates, and anyone they meet. This can help them in the future as they look for jobs or continue their education. One final lesson students can take from the application process is accepting that their control of the situation is limited, Simons says. She points out that every college and university in the United States receives hundreds, if not thousands, of applications every year. Competition is fierce, so not everyone is going to get into their first or even second choice of school. There are many places where you could be happy, she said. I think that is human to feel like, oh, this is the perfect fit. And I feel that happens in relationships, too. But there's more than one place where you could be satisfied, and that's a good thing to know, that nothing is the only option. Simons says that accepting defeat and learning how to move past it is probably the most important lesson of all. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Now it's time for Words and Their Stories from VOA Learning English. In many parts of the United States, temperatures are falling. This change of season, from summer to autumn, gives Americans many things to watch. Many people travel to areas of the U.S. that are famous for autumn leaves that change into brilliant shades of red, gold, and orange. Something else to watch is the antics of squirrels. Squirrels provide some of the most interesting and entertaining behavior in the natural world. Now, I use the word antics, meaning silly or funny games, because that's what it looks like. But I am not being fair to squirrels. They are actually doing something most important, gathering and storing food for the winter months. The fact that squirrels are doing an important activity, however, makes them no less entertaining to watch. The animals hurry across the ground, digging holes to find food, or to find where they buried food. They chase each other around trees. They jump from one tree limb to another, higher and higher, up in the tree, looking for nuts and seeds. Sometimes, squirrels drop this food to the ground below, and sometimes they hit people passing by. As I said earlier, this behavior is very entertaining to watch. These woodland creatures do not stay still for very long, and they are good at collecting things. So, it is not surprising that American English has a couple of expressions with the word squirrel. First, there is the adjective squirrely. Now, squirrely has several definitions. The most common one describes someone who is unusually active and unable to sit still, much like a squirrel. Another word with the same meaning is restless. When talking about word choice, restless may be more common in everyday speech, but squirrely is much more fun. Let's hear it used in an example.
At the end of a school year, students may get a little squirrely sitting in a classroom. It's best to let them run around outside during the day.
In this example, you can almost imagine a classroom of children suddenly turning into a group of squirrels, running around and unable to sit in their seats. So, the word you use depends on the feeling you want to create in your sentence. Squirrely can also describe someone who is acting very strange or crazy. Again, like a squirrel. Finally, the adjective squirrely can describe someone or something that seems to be dishonest. A more commonly used word that means the same thing is shady. Let's hear an example.
That business deal sounds squirrely to me. If something sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
So that is the adjective. We also have a very useful expression from the world of squirrels. To squirrel something away. Okay, so we know that squirrels collect nuts, seeds, and other things to eat. Then they hide them away to survive winter weather, when food is hard to find. People can do the same thing. When we squirrel something away, we put something in a safe or secret place so that we can use it in the future. When we collect or save things in an unusual or even unhealthy way, you could use the word hoard. Here's another example.
She has squirreled away magazines for years. There are stacks and stacks in her attic. I'm not sure what she is saving them for, but she won't get rid of them.
The things people squirrel away usually aren't nuts and seeds. We most often squirrel away money for the future.
When he retired, he was able to live quite comfortably. He squirreled away over $400,000 in the bank.
But we can squirrel away anything that is important to us and that we want to use later.
She squirreled away her favorite color of wool yarn as if they weren't going to make it anymore. She has more than 30 rolls of it in her closet.
And that's words and their stories for today. But we'll be back next week. It's my custom to squirrel away story ideas for this program, so we'll have a new one then. I'm Ana Mateo.
What if you could wave your phone over a piece of fish at a store and immediately see a record of its path through the supply chain? This may soon be possible. Current experiments are testing technology that can show how the fish was caught, when it was shipped, and how it was processed at a factory. This technology, called blockchain, is being tested for its potential to bring light to secretive industries in Southeast Asia. Blockchain was first developed to confirm dealings in Bitcoin, a digital money. In that case, the technology creates a public financial record. In Southeast Asia, important records, including those of identity information and property ownership, are often not carefully kept. Aaron Murphy is the founder and leader of Inlay Advisory Group, a business advisory company working in Myanmar and other countries with developing markets. She said blockchain technology helps make business operations in such countries safer and easier. Ideally, we would want to see adoption of blockchain at an official level all across the region. But perhaps not surprisingly, the governments that are leading blockchain adoption are those that are already low corruption, she told VOA. In some countries like Singapore, Murphy said blockchain is being used to improve customer service processes. However, in other countries, like the Philippines, blockchain helps citizens safely send money home from foreign countries. Murphy said the technology will help development, lower poverty, and increase foreign investment. Right now, there are many programs in Southeast Asia experimenting with blockchain technology. In June, the United Nations presented a blockchain-based system built in partnership with the technology company Microsoft and professional services company Accenture. The system gives stateless refugees a permanent identity record based on biometric data. The technology is also being explored in connection with efforts to improve voting system security. A blockchain-based app developed to observe the supply chain of fish from Indonesia is now being used with other industries, including clothing. Results from a pilot project can be found on the internet. Viewers can observe the movement of a piece of clothing from an alpaca farm in Dulverton, Britain, through every step of production to its final stop at a shop in London. Elisa DiCaprio is the head of research at R3, a banking software company that uses technology similar to blockchain. She said getting the technology and being able to use it are separate issues. Most countries have engineers who can rightly code the technology, she said. However, they do not always understand how to make it work for businesses and industries. DiCaprio predicts it will take about 5 years before we actually see blockchain used widely. She said she believes the most important effects of the technology will be seen on a macroeconomic level. However, the blockchain community is divided on how the technology should be used. Some see blockchain as a tool that can interfere with a global financial system they believe is corrupt. There is a serious opportunity for us here to remove money out of government, said a Southeast Asia-based Bitcoin trader. He said billions of people who are unable to use an official banking system will be able to move money with just a phone. Another group wants to see blockchain technology used by states such as Canada, Singapore, China, and Germany. All of these countries are exploring or experimenting with digital money using blockchain. Michael Shea, is with the Center for International Security and Cooperation at Stanford University. He suggested that blockchain creates a threat for government only if they ignore the technology. Countries that use it to establish safe and honest systems for money exchange will appeal to business and investment interests, he said. I'm Phil Dierking.
The state of Utah is home to 5 major national parks. They are among the most famous parks in the United States. This week, our national parks journey brings us to the southeastern part of the state. Here, you will find narrow canyons, steep cliffs, and hidden river valleys. Welcome to Zion National Park.
Zion sits within a desert landscape. The 260-kilometer-long Virgin River runs through it. It provides water for more than 1,000 kinds of plants to grow and over 100 kinds of animals to live, including the desert tortoise, desert bighorn sheep, and mountain lions. River water has also carved out the area's spectacular canyons and gorges. One of them, called Zion Canyon, stretches more than 20 kilometers through the park. In some places, it is more than 600 meters deep. At its most narrow point, it is just 6 meters across. Zion is one of the 10 most visited parks in the country. Travelers from America and around the world come here to explore its canyons, climb its steep walls, and walk its dramatic trails.
Zion's extraordinary beauty affected early Mormon settlers. Members of the religious group came to the area beginning in the 1850s. They thought it looked like heaven. They named the land after a place from the Bible, Zion. Zion means sanctuary or refuge in ancient Hebrew. Mormons were not, of course, the first people to explore the area. Experts say humans first arrived around 12,000 years ago. They hunted very large animals, like mammoths, giant sloths, and camels. Climate change and overhunting caused these animals to die out about 8,000 years ago. Humans changed their methods. They hunted smaller animals and gathered other food. Some 2,000 years ago, a culture centered on what we now call Zion began to form. Scientists know these people as the Virgin Anasazi. They settled in the area and grew crops. They used the water from the Virgin River and depended on the rich diversity of native plants and animals. Over time, many Native American groups called the area home, including the Southern Paiute. The Southern Paiutes called the area Makuntuweap. In their language, the name meant Straight Canyon. The United States Congress moved to protect the area beginning in the early 1900s. In 1909, it became a national monument. It was called Makuntuweap National Monument. President William Taft established the National Monument. He described the land as a labyrinth of remarkable canyons with highly ornate and beautifully colored walls, in which are plainly recorded the geological events of past ages. In 1918, the National Monument became a national park. And in 1919, Congress changed its name to Zion, the name used by the Mormons.
Today, almost 3 million people visit Zion National Park each year. Driving is restricted in much of the park during busy months. Instead, visitors travel in small buses that take them to areas where they can walk on paths into the wild areas. Walking is the best way to explore Zion. The park offers visitors many different kinds of paths. Some are short and easy. One easy walk is almost 2 kilometers. It takes hikers to a clear pool of water and waterfalls. Other hikes take most people all day to complete. Some are not advisable for people who are afraid of high places. A hike called Angel's Landing is considered one of the most exciting hikes in America. The trail leads to the top of a rock formation that stands more than 450 meters above the canyon floor. Toward the top of the rock, the walking path becomes extremely narrow. On both sides are very steep cliffs. Hikers can hold on to a rope for increased safety. Most hikers say the views from Angel's Landing make the difficult and dangerous experience worth it. Some visitors favor the lower parts of Zion National Park. One popular area is known as the Narrows. The Narrows is the narrowest part of Zion Canyon. The area has extremely tall canyon walls and unusual hanging gardens. These green areas of wildflowers, ferns, and mosses grow out of the sandstone walls. If you want to explore the Narrows, you must be ready to get wet. Hiking in the Narrows means walking next to, and even in, the Virgin River. If water levels are high, walking in the river can be extremely difficult. Sometimes, hikers may be waist high in water.
Even near the canyon floor, hikes at Zion can be dangerous. The great amount of rock in the area does not absorb water. As a result, sudden floods, called flash floods, are a serious threat. People can help prepare themselves as much as possible for the dangers of Zion National Park at the Visitor Center. But the risks come with great rewards. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.